Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Abba Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
Dare I say, lads, Chelsea are back. They beat PSG at their own game.
The Americanization's disgusting.
PSG got rage baited.
What a window, man.
Here we go.
Oh my God. Can we get excited and just like make it a starting 11 for NU?
We here!
Yes, sir!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the 6-Yard Box Podcast. This is episode 112, where today we are going over the Club World Cup Final, where Chelsea has pulled off the impossible and not only beat PSG, but absolutely embarrassed them. In other news, as you can see here by the elated Arsenal fans I have on the couch, Victor Gyökeres is practically here we go. They also had another here we go today, which we'll also talk about. But joining me for this insightful conversation about the blue side and red side of London is two London boys here. Blake, how are you, my friend?
Good. I'm just looking on Twitter. There is an account, The Red Side of London, with 20,000 followers. AFC have informed Real Madrid they're willing to pay 78 million pounds, which is 90 million euros, for Rodrigo.
They list a source in that, or it's just straight out the blue?
You know,
vibes.
What? I'm just gonna.
It's vibes.
I'm gonna feel the vibes.
It's vibes.
I'm gonna feel the vibes. Yes.
It's vibes. Okay, Miles, how about you? Welcome back to the show.
Hey, I'm doing well. Good to be back.
Feeling happy?
Yeah, quite excited.
Is it toned down by Chelsea winning the Club World Cup?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Okay, we'll talk about the final itself. Yeah. And then I want to get into a proper conversation of how we kind of interpreted the Club World Cup as a
you
tournament.
Don't or you do?
Like how we feel about it. Did we enjoy it? What
did
we like
to.
About
sorry,
it?
Sorry.
What did we not like about it?
Yeah, okay.
And
I'm actually like that.
Looking forward to hearing your opinion too on it. But first, let's get into the final, where unfortunately we don't have Antoine with us to talk about it. He has been planning a trip up north with
such
his family for
such a farce,
a couple of weeks.
Such a farce, bro. The one thing they've lost this entire season, the only thing they've lost this entire season so far, and he just gets to walk away scot-free.
Also, for those that
ridiculous.
Also, for those that are like our most loyal followers, you know that like Antoine is here. Is this the first time, or maybe second or third time he's missed a pod ever?
Yeah,
he's usually
does that
here.
Feel right?
Only a handful of them.
Yeah, only a handful of them. So, I mean, big up to him, but at the same time, like the one podcast that he misses.
I know
this
I know.
Year.
PSG I swear, there's a lot of times this year where I think it was like Arsenal having a down result, and then Blake had to miss it. I don't know, but you were here for the big one. They went out of the Champions League. I'll give you that.
I was here. They bullied me.
Miles was not for extenuating circumstances. That valid reasons.
Yeah, I was bullied, but it's fine.
Yeah. I have not missed any of the United drubbings.
Well, there's been
that
a
is,
lot.
That so, is,
even if you had,
and
it,
I have
we
not
probably
missed,
would forget.
And I have not missed one. I have not taken one day off of getting clowned
good
on
for
United.
Yes. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Let's get into the actual game. Boys, what a fantastic final. What an unexpected final. I think if there was one word to sum this up, it would be football.
Yeah.
Right?
Dare I say
what?
Dare I say that Chelsea winning the Club World Cup just legitimized the tournament even more?
Legitimizes?
Because if PSG would have walked away with the tournament, they just won the Champions League, clearly the best team in Europe, it kind of just washes away the whole prospect of the underdog, the whole prospect of the Brazilian teams, the African teams coming up and going up against the best teams in the world. Again, obviously Chelsea's a huge club, but the fact that they actually won, they beat PSG in a convincing fashion as well, kind of creates a sense of legitimacy in the fact that anyone can win it. It isn't just the best team in the world.
Yes.
And that's what we wanted for the Club World Cup this season.
And that's not saying Chelsea's a bad team.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely
obviously not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't label them the best team in the world. Mm. They'll be champions for 4 years now. They'll have that stupid ass patch on them.
It's bad.
All right, we'll give them that. But I wouldn't say they're the best team in the world, which makes this performance all that more historic. And it's not the first time we've had an all-time shock performance by Chelsea where they've shown up as underdogs and beaten the best team in the world. I'm thinking of Barcelona 2012. I'm thinking of Bayern Munich 2012. I'm thinking of Man City 2021.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of times where Chelsea has walked into a game as underdogs, no one giving them a shot, and they've pulled off the incredible. And they've done it once again here. I think in retrospect, we're actually way too dismissive of their chances in this Club World Cup final.
You're probably right. And their squad has grown immensely in size, but in talent too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just dismiss that because of the amount of signings they bring in every season and because of the new ownership that happened a couple years ago and the way that they've gone about their business. But dude, like we said it last pod, like Caicedo, Enzo Fernandez, yeah, it's a $250 million or £1 million midfield. But shit, it's a good midfield now.
It is.
And there's no denying that. Cole Palmer was a fantastic signing. And no one can deny that. They just got João Pedro, who looks to be like a killer for
them. Who a couple weeks ago was chilling on vacation.
Yeah. And he's coming out and he's scoring bangers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you flash back, like, I guess, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, you had Flamengo. Sorry, you're right. I get the two confused all the time. I'm sorry.
Me too. I did.
Flamengo, like, clowning them.
Yep.
Even like, obviously, true, they beat Chelsea, but you guys remember seeing that tweet
the
about
Twitter,
them,
yeah.
You know?
Mm. Yeah.
And now look at this. Look at it now. I mean, you know, what's it called? Upsets happen all the time in football, and they're the best, but rarely, I find, do they ever happen in a final as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really good for football. I really do.
Yeah.
Dare I say, lads, Chelsea are back. I think the banter little era they had there, spending all that money, not getting the results. Like, obviously, they were getting better and better throughout the season, but this was the statement that Chelsea are back.
Absolutely.
And
without a doubt.
I know, you're in the Arsenal kit. I'm in the United kit. This isn't fill me with solace saying this, but Chelsea are truly back. They beat PSG at their own game. It was an absolute masterclass from Enzo Maresca and the lads.
Mm-hmm.
It was direct football. It was making the game a battle, going up against the midfield that we've been hyping up for months and months and months as the best midfield in the world. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
They've been dominating Inter, dominating Real Madrid, dominating Atletico Madrid. And Chelsea made it look easy against that midfield by making it a battle and rage baiting a couple of them, which worked pretty well.
Yeah.
But pressing from the front as well, they literally beat PSG at their own game. It's not even just that PSG had an off day, which don't get me wrong. They did.
100%.
But Chelsea came out yesterday and looked fantastic. And people are going to try to like discredit it by saying that clubs didn't really care about this competition, which isn't true, or that PSG just looked tired, even though that they've played, I think, the same amount of games this season, or there's one game difference.
Probably, yeah.
65 to 64 games this entire season. You can say that PSG didn't show up in this game, but that was because of Chelsea's amazing performance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just comes out of salt from a couple of fans. I don't know if we're going to hear from either of you, but you cannot downplay this achievement from a football perspective whatsoever.
You nailed it on the head.
Yeah.
And it was exactly that. They just beat them.
Yeah.
They did what they had to do. And for me, what was the most surprising thing, and it's really exemplified by that third goal, is PSG has their press going.
Mm-hmm.
Very hardworking team. Enrique has that team drilled to perfection, or so we thought. For some reason, the midfield passed the press, the midfield behind the press, rather. It took one pass from whoever the ball-playing center back was and Cole Palmer to drop in deep and a bit centralized. Dude, and they were broken open. That's what happened on the third goal. Cole Palmer dropped in deep. There was a pass through the middle, and then that whole press was just broken like that in 1 second.
Exactly.
And then it opened up the game, and that happened multiple times. There was so much space on the wings for Chelsea to exploit, and like it was shocking. Like, I don't know if it was a sense of not arrogancy but unexpectedness from PSG,
yeah,
or it was just, like we said, Maresca setting up perfectly, knowing how PSG plays, yep. studying the system, and just executing his team to the utmost level of their ability. And it was honestly fun to watch. Like, I'll be honest. You guys know me and Chelsea.
Yeah.
We're okay. We're on good terms.
Second half, I found a little bit muted.
Yeah.
They were hogging it at the corner flag at minute 60. I was like, all right, lads, let's move it along.
Do you blame them, though? Because of all teams that would make a crazy comeback, it would be PSG to do that.
You're absolutely right. Let's go goal by goal. First goal.
Well, the first and second goal, I feel like you can just talk about it the same way.
Honestly, you can. I think it was a Robert Sanchez, like, ball over the top or something.
Yes.
But it was Nuno Mendes against Malo Gusto. Uncharacteristic mistake by Nuno Mendes, falling over, not getting the header, and ball kind of fumbles around the box. It's a 4-on-3 for Chelsea, falls to Cole Palmer, and tucks it away beautifully. Second goal.
Oh, my God.
Bad defending from Vitinha, showing Palmer onto his stronger foot, especially bad defending from Lucas Beraldo, who had an absolute disaster class in this
which
game.
Which we kind of expected.
Close him down.
Yeah.
Same thing for the third goal. It's Palmer running through the entire team.
Yeah.
Midfield is nowhere to be seen. Lucas Beraldo needs to come and do something, cut off the pass to João Pedro. He doesn't. It's a simple ball through and a beautiful finish, to be fair.
Yeah, and the second goal is the most concerning by far because at the end of it, there's literally just an open shot for Palmer to put it anywhere he likes.
Yep.
There's no one in his sights. There's no one trying to block the pass. They both showed him on the inside, and it's just it's essentially an open net for him.
I know.
Because I don't know how he get that open. Like, it's crazy.
It's not an open net because Gigi Donnarumma has been like the best goalkeeper in the world over the past couple of months. And how many amazing finishers have we seen come against him, place the ball beautifully or hit it with power or something, and he's able to deal with it time and time and time again.
Yeah.
And Cole Palmer, twice in a row, who cares about power? He just tucks it beautifully.
Yeah.
It finishes so well. And the dummy on the second goal.
Yeah, gross.
Disgusting.
Yeah. It's
absolutely disgusting.
Did PSG get humbled, lads?
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
They had to. They clearly came into this game overconfident.
Yeah. I mean, I think PSG, stat-wise, they, I guess, by terms of, like, possession and passes and all that, like, they dominated that.
Yeah.
But they lost 3-0. And when Chelsea had the ball, they were much more useful with it, much more creative, much more, fierce, you know?
Yeah.
Direct.
What's the opposite of toothless? A toothfold attack.
A very toothy performance.
A toothy attack. Like it was one of those games where, you know, I've watched so many of these types of games from any team up and down the levels of footy where, you know, where that one team doesn't hold as much possession.
Yeah.
But when they have the ball, you just know that, like, there is something that's going to, like, be close to a goal. Like, if something's like, ooh, like, they're definitely, when they have the ball, they look really scary.
Yeah, they look menacing.
Yeah, whereas PSG, on the other hand, kind of just held the ball, wasn't happening for them as much, you know?
Yeah, and I just want to say, excuse me, I don't know if he's done this before, but Jis Rames at motherfucking center mid, or CDM, dude, he was fantastic. I mean, again, this whole era of the inverted fullback is kind of getting ridiculous, but there's definitely a reason for it. And it's proven by City. It's proven by this game as well. But Reece James not even being an inverted fullback, but just playing at center mid was fantastic. Of course, he got injured at the end of the game because it's Reece James, so obviously. But his ability to not only make the right decisions in the midfield, but dictate the play. There was a couple little passes, a couple turns that he made, and it's like, it looks like this guy has played here a lot.
Yep.
And that honestly was such a breath of fresh air for them because it allowed for Enzo and Caicedo to not have to take the full brunt of being the pivot because Reece James acted as a bit of a pivot as well.
Yep.
Enzo Fernandez could get more forward. And then I think that also allowed for the midfield to be a little wider in the sense that it was, there was more space for the attackers to come back and exploit. And it just opened the game up. Reece James had such a crucial role in this Chelsea performance. And again, I don't watch Chelsea every game. Maybe he's done it before, but him playing and starting at center mid, man, what a call for Maresca.
It made such a battle in midfield and gave them so much more physicality. That was the way that we've talked about how PSG can be beaten before. Mm-hmm. It was direct football if you can beat that relentless press. Mm-hmm. And it was if you go into that midfield battle, making it a battle, bringing it to PSG's midfield. Because as good as Vitinha and Fabian Ruiz and João Neves is, outside of João Neves, like, the physicality is not like, the physicality is there because we know how João Neves is. He's a tenacious little fuck. But in terms of size, there's only so much you could do with that Conte, you know, tenacity when you're 5'6", right? Mm-hmm. So Chelsea bringing it with Reece James in midfield, bringing it, making it a battle, it looked like men against boys in that midfield at times. Yeah. It really did. And that's a massive reason as to why Chelsea were able to dominate possession at times, especially at the beginning of the game, therefore making PSG maybe a little bit stunned, and then just keeping that momentum throughout the entire first half. And I want to give love to Maresca. Maresca.
Fair play.
I've had questions about over the past couple of months. Pochettino had a great ending to his time at Chelsea. I think his sacking was a little bit not deserved, but Maresca has come in and he's not only gotten the best out of the squad, moved some players along that needed to be moved along, but has also proven in his in-game management to be one of the elite managers. And I'm really excited to see how this Chelsea team develops over the next couple of years. And if they're challenging for the Premier League in 2, 3, fuck, maybe even next year, don't be surprised, lads.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised. You could be a little bit upset at how quickly Chelsea turns players over and turns managers over. But when you do that time and time and time again, just statistically, you're going to land on a hit. And it looks like they landed on a hit with a lot of these players. And it looks like they landed on a hit with this manager too. And hey, you can't knock it. They got here eventually.
Yeah.
They got here eventually.
If you throw enough shit at the wall, something will stick.
After
50, 60 players in the squad, in and out of the squad in the past couple of years.
And I don't think Todd Boehly regrets a thing.
Obviously, he doesn't regret a thing. He's making how much we talked about.
It was 100 plus mil.
Yeah, they're
making.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I know.
So
do we want to touch on the fiasco at the end of the game?
Ah, yes. So PSG got rage baited. I don't think there's any better way to describe it than PSG got rage baited. And I understand. If I was 3-0 down after 43 minutes, had to sit through a near half-hour halftime show, and then had Cucurella in my ear for the entire second half, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
João Neves, you made even more of a fan of me because I would have picked that little guy up too. I would have picked him up as well.
He's got so much hair as well, just to...
You know what? I was with a couple of my dad's friends before that, and like the guy a couple minutes before the red card was going like, why doesn't Cucurella cut his hair? Like, that has to be so difficult to play with.
Yeah.
And then João Neves pulled it. And he's like, That's why. It's so pullable.
It is, exactly.
It's so pullable.
And he's also
just daring you.
Yeah, and he's
I don't
so
think it's the first time somebody's gotten...
Oh, no, of course not.
...punished for pulling Cucurella's hair.
No. Absolutely not.
Well, you also see, like, the way that football's played with, like, you know, everything gets so, like, nitty-gritty kind of stupid fouls all the time with the pushing and the pulling from people.
Yeah.
And... it's just, you're bound to just, your hands are going to move around, swing around, and it's bound to catch his hair. And knowing Cucurella, by the slight touch of the hair,
it was very much on purpose,
but knowing Cucurella, and he's just such an unlikable guy.
This is what I was talking about with Chelsea making it a battle, right? Like, you're enraging that PSG team for the entire time because not one time over the past couple of months have they been challenged like this in any game. And they weren't expecting this from Chelsea. And that midfield, bullying the midfield at PSG, plus the shithouses in that squad, made it such a difficult time for PSG to focus with the same approach that they've had in recent months, which has made them so good.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed with the mind games of Chelsea, though obviously you can hate on it from a, you know, personable perspective. But, I mean, that's exactly what they needed to do. It's exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah.
At 2-0, I see Donnarumma get up instantly and start berating the defenders. That's what Chelsea wanted. Like getting João Neves to do that is exactly what Chelsea wanted.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the anger on Luis Enrique's face, that's exactly what Chelsea wanted. And they pulled off that plan to absolute perfection.
Everyone did their part. And a person who I was surprised did their part so well was Robert Sanchez. We haven't touched on yet.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a fantastic game. Again, he didn't have you know, he didn't make 40,000 saves, but he made like two or three really solid saves. There was the one claim on a cross that he just grabbed,
yep,
controlled the box, no doubt about it. He had the ball. Another one on a header, and then obviously the save
on Dembele.
Yeah, on Dembele. So he was fantastic. And the keeper problem, the keeper position has been a problem for Chelsea for a little bit. Maybe not a glaring issue, but a cause of concern for sure.
Yeah.
And out of all the players they brought in, it seems like the keeper position is one that has had a lot of turnover, that has had a lot of scrutiny placed on it. And if Robert Sanchez can be that guy, if he can, you know, perform in a big moment, that's all you want, really. Like, if you can perform in the big moments, there's odds are in every Premier League game, you're going to do what you need to do. That's how I look at it. And Robert Sanchez kind of proved to me today that he can do it in a big moment. He's obviously the number one of the team. He's going to be the number one of the team for the rest of the season, barring anything drastic.
I won't be surprised if they replace him.
Fair. I don't think it'll be.
He wants that new contract, that's for sure. Fair. But like, I don't think this completely changes the opinion of Robert Sanchez. And I don't think Chelsea are dumb enough to be completely swayed by it. Will they sign a goalkeeper? I don't know if they were in for one before the Club World Cup. I don't know if this changes their approach, whatever. Maybe they weren't even going to move away from Robert Sanchez anyways. But if you're looking at it from an objective perspective, like, obviously this performance matters, but it's just one game.
Sure.
Let's call a spade. He has not been up to Chelsea par.
Sure. But I think it's definitely gives him the start of the season. Like, he's starting in the season. I don't even if they sign a keeper, I don't think there's any way you don't have Sanchez starting.
Again, they'll buy 20 more keepers.
Sure.
There was like six on the podium.
Sure. And he's the one that won the battle, apparently.
They just sold Petrovic, you're telling me.
Yeah. Like
23 million or something.
To Bournemouth, my boy.
As you slap the Arsenal.
My second boy. You know, I told you, I mean, I don't know, we don't have to be done with the PSG talk yet, but I told you, with Onana being injured hurt now, which I don't know if we talked about yet, but Onana's hurt. He's going to be out for like, what, 2 months or something?
He's going to miss the first couple of games of the Premier League season.
Who's your keeper? Bayinder?
It's Bayinder as of now, yes.
Aaron Ramsdale, man.
No, bro.
He's for sale.
No,
he doesn't want to play in the championship.
Aaron Ramsdale to Manchester United. Stop.
Who says no?
No.
Prem proven keeper, Champions League proven keeper, has played a game in the Champions League.
I'd sign that man behind you.
Oh my God.
I'd sign that man behind you a million times before I fell for Aaron fucking Ramsdale.
Look, Emi Martinez is what? 31 now?
Get the hell out of here.
Emi Martinez is 31 now.
That's prime age for
a
keeper.
He's 32.
Oh, that's prime age for a keeper.
Aaron Ramsdale is what, 26?
Mate, they're not center mids. They're not center mids,
mate. And Ramsdale, 27, all right?
Mate, they're not.
They're not
running 10K a game.
Two yellow cards last season for Aaron Ramsdale. What does that tell you? It means he's locked in.
He actually said himself he's not locked in.
I know he did.
He daydreams during games and openly admitted to it.
He sees a pigeon, he sees a seagull on the pitch, he loses focus. And
if we sign Aaron Ramsdale, would you be secretly cheering for him?
Oh, actually, yeah, that's crazy. I don't know. Oh, I didn't think about it. Because
if we sign Emi Martinez, it's gonna be so easy for you to just hate watch United even more, right?
Yeah.
If we sign in Ramsdale, that makes you conflicted. You don't want to be conflicted hate watching United.
Oh, that's actually really true.
Exactly.
See? He is a likable bloke, though. I can't lie.
Nah, I'd probably still hate watch him.
You still hate watch Aaron Ramsdale? I mean, he's not a likable bloke. Not at all, actually.
Ramsdale?
He's just an Arsenal bloke.
He's likable as an Arsenal fan. He's a shithouse. He wasn't a shithouse at Southampton because
that's true.
Up.
You know, he's a shithouse. Yeah, that's
you
why
can't
like
shithouse when you're the worst Premier
League
team.
You're down 3-0 at halftime. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the good clubs. Not on you guys. I'm talking about Southampton.
And United.
United. And United. Arsenal are not a shit club.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's fine.
Like, mediocre.
I got you. Right.
Okay. Chelsea are... I'm sorry.
It's okay.
How do we project them for next season?
Ooh!
What's Chelsea going to look like next year, you think?
Like, table position-wise or player-wise?
I think this top four, as you were saying last time, it seems set in stone.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised if one of City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea do not make top four.
Yeah.
If Chelsea come fourth, I want to call it a disappointing season.
No, it'd be a great season. I think it'd be a great season.
I think it'd be a good season, but I'm telling you, Boley, Clear Lake, all those guys at Chelsea, they're not aiming for fourth place.
Of course they're not. But
obviously not, but I think if they come fourth as we're going, that's a solid season for Chelsea. I think they're looking at it like they could have done much better.
I think the best way to look at it, rehashing a point that I made last podcast, the gap between fourth and fifth last season was 66 points. Chelsea have just won the Club World Cup and they came fourth. Newcastle came fifth. 3 points was in that. Sorry, not 6 points. Three
yeah, it was
points.
Very close.
Has Newcastle done anything?
Anthony Elanga.
In regards to transfers, sure, Anthony Elanga, that has gotten them not only just 3 points better, but enough better that you think that they have a chance to not only overtake Chelsea, but just get in the top four in some capacity. They have brought in William Osula from Sheffield United. I don't know who that is. Young.
Won't start, obviously. Yeah.
Another winger from Malaga on a free transfer. No idea. And then Anthony Elanga, which is a good signing. Anthony Elanga will be
It's
good
also mid-July.
Yeah.
They were not in the Club World Cup.
But can we not only evaluate the things that we can evaluate right now? We can only evaluate what is set in stone.
Obviously.
So that's why we're here. That's why I'm talking about it. You told me to evaluate it.
But I think we haven't seen enough to put Newcastle like surefire top four, obviously. Mm. But that gives our point even more that I think top four is pretty much set in the Premier League.
Exactly.
Barring some big shock, right?
Exactly.
Of course. So if Chelsea come fourth, is that a good season in their eyes?
I think it's just another step to the right place.
It's the same step. But I think they need to approach this season exactly how you guys are approaching it.
I think they probably will, but at the same time, they're not at the level of a City, Liverpool, or Arsenal. They're just not. Experience-wise.
They're close.
They're not far off.
It does not take long for the reputation of a club to change. If they come in and win their first five games in a row, yeah. Will you necessarily be surprised? Not really.
Yeah.
Like I would not be surprised. Genuinely, I would not be surprised if Chelsea came second next year.
Fair.
And it won't just be maybe it won't be because like they're clearly the much better team than you guys. Maybe the difference is 1 or 2 points.
Yeah.
You guys focus on the Champions League at the business end of the year. They went out early, so they focus more on the Prem. Whatever it may be, extenuating circumstances, whatever. Like I don't know what it is. My clear and obvious favorite for the Prem next year is Man City. I think they're going to be back to their well-oiled machine that they are.
Yeah.
As much as it hurts to say as a United fan. I mean, like the more I think about the Prem, it's literally just you four and then the rest.
Yeah.
And to me, the gap is growing. And absolutely. they have fucking Estevao coming through. They have Giovanni Quenda coming through. They have so much, like they are the youngest. They were, I believe by average age, they're the youngest team at the Club World Cup. And I think they're one of the youngest teams in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Like, is it almost like, can we almost look at it like as a certainty that Chelsea are going to win the Premier League in the next 5 years?
Easier said than done. Obviously. I think it's certain that they're going to improve. And that's been known. That's been apparent by the way they played, by their attack in the transfer window, their plans with Maresca. It's certain that they're going to improve. It just took time. It took time for Caicedo to, you know, adapt to this Chelsea system. It took time for Enzo to come in and be the player that he is. It takes time. It took time for Cole Palmer to be.
And now that they haven't just adapted. They're arguably like one of, if not the, if you're going off yesterday's game, the best midfielder in the world.
Sure.
So they haven't just adapted.
To play devil's advocate, you said one game doesn't change everything. So I'm going to say one game doesn't change everything.
I would still say maybe either Barcelona or PSG have the best midfield in the world. But Chelsea, even a couple weeks ago, I was saying this as well.
Arsenal in there? Zubimendi? Zubimendi?
He hasn't played a game for you guys, so let's maybe judge it as it happens. But I was even saying a couple weeks ago when Chelsea were putting up some mediocre performances,
yeah,
that I think they have one of the best midfields in the world. And that's going to make a massive impact in the Premier League next season. Like, that's just fact.
Still for the fact, though, that their midfield that they are running costs 300 odd million or whatever. And I mean, that's just like a distasteful take from me, but it's more like the amount of money they spent, they should have the best midfield in the world, but they don't.
True.
And that's the thing. That's another reason why the Club World Cup win for them might be shoved under the rug and it might be disregarded because people hate when clubs spend money, especially in an unethical way, quote unquote.
Of course.
But at the end of the day, Chelsea, although their recruitment has been questionable and they've brought in way too many players, whatever system, whatever plan they have, it's working now and it's showing its fruits. And that's enough for Chelsea fans, for the board, for even you, a rival fan, to look at it and say, you know what? It's working. They're a good team. Maybe they do challenge this year. And you're right. Looking at it, they could have a genuinely amazing season.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Why don't they make a run to the Champions League semifinals?
Honestly, if they could beat PSG, then what's stopping them? Yeah,
they have the squad depth to go through a season and just grind. That's what it is, man. That's what Arsenal's been missing in the past couple of years. That's what, like, United have missed. Not in the same scale, but just in general. You need squad depth, and that's something, although may not be the best players on their bench, they have the depth to plug players in who can do a decent enough job until the other ones come back.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Absolutely. I mean, they have about three Champions League level squads. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's crazy. Insane. It's unreal.
Yeah, good for them, I guess. Too much glaze for them. I realize I'm an Arsenal fan. I had to pull back a little bit.
Okay, let's talk about the Club World Cup as a whole.
Sure.
The competition, the entertainment. This game specifically opened up with not Bruce Buffer, his brother, Michael Buffer, opening up in the blue corner.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy.
The Americanization of the Club World Cup, because it was in America, is like, oh, it's disgusting.
Disgusting.
I really hate it. I don't know. Like, whoever plans this, obviously it's FIFA, but there's some outside consultancy going into this. What goes through your... I mean, okay, this is just, but this is also, like, the U.S. Like, we're... Us Americans think that we want to Americanize
everything.
Yeah, you speak for yourself, sir.
I'm speaking for myself, and I'm speaking for the people of America.
We stand on guard for thee. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes,
we do.
The
America... You are strong and free. Sorry.
The Americanization, there's a thing with Americans where they feel the need to Americanize everything. Everything.
It's because a superiority complex.
Because they think that it will be the best if they Americanize it.
Superiority complex.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And unfortunately, I don't think soccer is better when it's Americanized. And I think that showing this halftime show, the Michael Buffer... All these stops that they've pulled out, having games in a football stadium, in American football stadiums. I know that's just not up to them because there are so many of them and not enough soccer stadiums. It's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's really frustrating to see because the reason why I love football so much, and I think you can agree and you can agree as well, I think for us too, more so because you and I follow American sports more closely, is that like you have your baseball, you have your basketball, you have all that, and we love that. But when we watch soccer, we love it so much because it's so different and it's such a departure from what the regular American sports are of having commercials and all this. Yes. And to like turn the TV on and you have a presenter announcing the walkout of players and stuff, it's like really, and a halftime show, it's like, what the fuck is this? This is like the Super Bowl all over again. And I didn't watch the Club World Cup final to watch a second Super Bowl in the span of 6 months. Like, so I said, I'm not a big fan of it. And I think a sad reality is that we have the World Cup coming up next year, and I think it's going to be no different. And it's going to be the exact same. Maybe. It's going to be even more. Thank you. Yeah.
I think the Club World Cup, there were elements to enjoy, certainly. I think if I was to give it a 1 to 10 rating, I would give the Club World Cup as an experience like a 7 out of 10. Some aspects of it I really, really liked. But in certain other aspects, it represents everything wrong with current day football. And what do I mean by that? The Club World Cup is built on a premise that I really, really, really like. It being clubs from South America, Africa, Asia, Europe, everywhere coming together and actually having a type of tournament that I would make on FIFA back in the day. You know, how would Palmeiras face off against Chelsea? You know, how would LAFC face off against Dortmund? Those kind of things. Like games that I would that I genuinely have been excited about. But FIFA does not work in a product first focus. They focus on the presentation first and they focus on business. Exactly, Miles. If you had this in Brazil, we're talking about this tournament much, much differently. If you're not doing the cash grabs, the DAZN deals backed by Saudi Arabia, the pre-match introductions, the halftime shows, just the clear and obvious ways that you are trying to monetize this tournament before you're even proving its worth, that makes it feel so hollow. And that makes football feel passionless more than it normally is. And again, like, I've been trying to hold on to the premise of this, which has been like the best teams from every continent coming together and playing against each other, which is something that we have never seen to this scale. This should be a concept that we are in love with, right? But it's just clouded for me by all of these extracurriculars that FIFA are forcing down our throat with the ultimate goal of not growing football through what's made football so loved over the past century plus, but by Americanizing it, monetizing it, and putting profits over passion in a way that I cannot get behind. Mm. And it frustrates me. They're talking about the 2029 Club World Cup being in Saudi Arabia, lads. Come on.
Have some shame.
Come on.
Was it just me? I'm trying to remember from the few games I watched. Were there, they did the double screen for, like, quick commercials during, like, water breaks. Is that right?
Yeah.
They did it at every, well, I don't know. Any of you boys have, like, were watching the paid version of DAZN? Because I was watching the free one.
Yeah.
And there'd be a pop-up coming up every 3 minutes to upgrade my plan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Like, if you watch on the TV app, like, literally every 3 minutes, you get a big pop-up covering half the screen going, like, you're watching the free experience. Upgrade now. And it's like...
Yeah. Fair. Well said.
It's, like... I think if this wasn't in America, then this would have been such a peak tournament.
Yeah, well said. I like that. I agree. For me, I mean, it's just... I just see the money. I see what they're trying to do. And instead of fighting it, although I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it's kind of like, what else do you do?
Yeah, take it with a grain of salt.
You just go golfing during the final or something?
You know what I mean? Right? And you know what? You are kind of right. We talked about it. I don't want to throw you under the bus, Julian. But you said to me that you were getting a little tired of the Club World Cup.
I was getting a little tired of football in general because I think genuinely, when you watch so much of it and you don't get a break, then you're going to get a little bit tired of
it. And do you want to know what it was? I think your point kind of encapsulated it for me. Near the end of it, and even throughout the beginning of it, it did feel a little bit inauthentic. Mm. It definitely felt like a spectacle, a show, an experience put on, which is fine. But instead of it being the heart of what it is, which is football, the best teams from every continent coming and playing the game that we all love, instead of it just being that and only having to focus on the players on the pitch and what we had to watch, it was the weather. It was the halftime performances. It was Donald Trump. It was all of these outside things that didn't make it about football. And of course, these things happen in other instances around the game as well. It's not just in the Club World Cup, but in the Club World Cup, you're right. It was so expanded to the point where we were just thrown and shoved all this monetization shit that just removed any authenticity from the game.
I think the other big criticism of the Club World Cup was going to be injuries, right?
Yeah.
Which, outside of the Musiala thing, we didn't really see many crazy injuries. However, I think in a couple of months' time, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of massive players, tearing their ACLs, pulling their hamstrings, stuff like that. And that's out of exhaustion. That's out of being overworked. And then we could have a serious talk about, was this massively promoted tournament in July really worth it?
And it will happen. As sad as it, I know it will happen. And when we go on our social media, you will see the statistics of how many games whoever this player is played over the calendar year.
Yeah, like don't be surprised if Usman Dembele goes down with something soon. Mm. Or don't be surprised if Cole Palmer goes down with something soon. If Enzo Fernandez goes down with something soon. And like, that will...
Hakimi, how many games has Hakimi played this season?
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
And he went from, I believe he had AFCON during last season, finished last season, I believe went to the Olympics, if I'm remembering correctly, and then went straight into PSG preseason, didn't get much of a break, and then did all of this season, then
all Club of Champions World Cup. League, Club World Cup.
Won everything, obviously, so was in every single game possible, went, played the maximum games in the Club World Cup, will maybe get like a week or two off if he's lucky.
Yeah.
And then it's straight back. I think Enzo Maresca said himself in his post-match interview that he's excited about winning the Club World Cup, but that he's even more excited about now being able to have a break. And I'm like, damn, you just won the Club World Cup, and that's one of your first quotes. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But the players definitely feel it. Like, I still remember that Vardiol interview from a couple weeks ago where, like, he's low-key, like, kind of stressed about the lack of a break that he's going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, Club World Cup is... it hasn't been not fun.
Yeah.
It hasn't been unenjoyable. There are just a few qualms that you have to have.
Consider, yeah.
From a passion or a traditional standpoint.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you, World Cup.
Club World Cup.
You. Thank you, Club World Cup. You were all right. I won't miss you. To be honest, I won't. I'm excited for real football to come back.
See ya.
Yeah. I am excited for real football to come back.
Especially with my club.
Yeah. Good transition there, Blake. Good transition. All right, I'm going to let the two Arsenal boys take it away now. I'll see you guys next time. And
Julian out.
Mosquera, here we go. There's another slap in the face to Antoine, you little poo-poo. The fact that you are not here for me to shove it in your face that, oh, Mosquera wants PSG. No, he freaking does not. He wants to come to the north side of London to be in the best club in England. Hopefully this year we can say that. I think we might be able to. What a window, man. What a window so far. I know. Miles is looking at me like I'm crazy because I've been up and down. That's the way I am. I'm up and down like a roller coaster, all right? And I love that about myself, and I will never change. But what will change is this Arsenal team even more so than it already has, because Rodrigo may not come in, sure. But I think we have one more big signing in us, which, whether it's Rodrigo, whether it's Eze. I think we have one more huge, massive bomb that's going to drop, and
at
we're
going to
be absolutely flustered by
it. At the time of this recording, it's two major ones, just because obviously Gilk is like almost here we go. But
oh, yeah.
I'm confident we'll get
him. By the time this comes out, he's here we go.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's proceed like he's here we go.
Yeah.
Pretty go much ahead. Here we go. Sorry.
You know what? I was wrong. Again, I like to admit when I'm wrong. I am not one to say that I'm always right, because I clearly am not. I was wrong. I was frustrated with the tactics, with the negotiation tactics from Berta and from Arsenal. But what made me so uncomfortable with that was the, like we said, the PTSD from the past, the lack of conviction in the signings from the past. But this isn't Edu anymore. This is Berta. And what Berta has done is address the issues right on the head. He's put the nail in the coffin and addressed all the issues that we need, and we're not done yet. And that's something that has been missed from Arsenal recruitment in so many years past. Calafiori last year was a fine signing, but a little bit strange. Not really a position of need. Mikel Merino, again, albeit hindsight, great signing, but not really a position that we desperately needed. This window, not only have we addressed the backup center back with Mosquera being here we go, we addressed the striker with Gyökeres, we addressed the right winger with Noni Madueke, we addressed with Rodrigo and Thomas Partey leaving and one going to jail, but we addressed those two leaving by getting Norgaard and Zubimendi. The left wing is a gaping hole still. It is, because Trossard might be on his way out. Trossard's also just getting older and is not as effective. And Martinelli's been linked away. I think he's going to stay. But ultimately, what this is showing is that with the new recruitment heads, with Berta at the helm, there is a different plan of attack. And it's a plan of attack that hasn't been in the Arsenal DNA, even since Wenger was here. This is a guy who knows what it's like to get deals across the line. And he's proven it at Atletico Madrid for years and years, years past. So it's finally nice to say that this club has a plan that I can back. It has a plan that I am excited for.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you. I'm trying to like put myself in the shoes of me when we had Edu and try and remember what it was. But you're right. I still think there is a bit of that frustration from Arsenal fans about some of these deals taking longer than they should. I also think, like, I don't know if it's just us and me being single-minded, but I think that there's just so much good insider coverage about our club that this news gets revealed 2 weeks before it should happen. And people are expecting it to happen as soon as possible. But when in reality, these things take time. It's just that the coverage on these deals that we do take a lot of time. But I could be wrong. Very exciting.
Super exciting.
I really like the fact that I can say confidently going into this season, it's the first time where we feel confident at just about every single position.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. I think left wing, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, like last season we had, don't get me wrong, Havertz is great and so is Jesus. But like,
well,
he had a good couple of weeks.
Sorry, I had to.
No, you're fine.
He had a good couple of weeks, guys. He's world class.
No, we had... But we had two decent strikers to start out the season.
Yeah.
But we knew in our hearts, we were like, we still needed a number nine, right? That was our gaping hole last season.
Yeah.
And it goes back further with midfield. I don't know. I can go on.
No, you're 100%. Like,
but this season, we're going, oh my God. Like, can we get excited and just like make it a starting 11 for Man U? Like, okay, do you think that we're...
For the Man U game.
Man U game. Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. Okay. I was like, for Man U.
I'm so scared for that game, by the way.
Yeah, of course we are. We don't need to talk about it now, but just like, if we do get Eze, like what? We have Eze on the left.
Yeah.
Gilke 9, Saka on the right.
It's disgusting.
Odegaard, Zub. Oh.
But the best part about it is like, oh, wait. Yuck has an off game. Let's throw on Havertz, who is a completely different profile and who has shown he can be prolific in the Premier League, in the Arsenal system.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh my God. Odegaard sucks again like he did all last season. Let's throw on Nwaneri. No, scratch that. I don't want to throw on Nwaneri. Let's throw on Miles Lewis-Skelly in center mid and let's move Rice up the pitch.
God, I forgot about Lewis-Skelly.
You know what I mean? Oh, man, we need to shore up the defense. Timber, I don't know. I don't want to get injured. Ben White, get on. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what we've needed, bro. This is what we've been crying out for so long. If, like, dude, if Rice has scored 3 goals already, scored a hat trick, we're up 4-0 in the fucking 70th minute. All right, Norgaard, come on. Shirt up for me.
Love
it. Beautiful.
I think Norgaard's
beautiful.
Norgaard's going to be one of those players that's just going to die for the badge, and he's just going to be one of Arteta's little minions.
And quickly,
does the job.
I just want to talk about Mascara. 21-year-old center back. Has like 80 games of experience in La Liga, which is fantastic for a 21-year-old.
Oh, wow.
A good ball playing center back, which is nice because
that's solid.
Both Saliba and Gabriel are decent at it, but they're not like directly that. Gabriel's better than Saliba, but they're not directly ball playing center backs.
Okay.
Mosquera is that guy. Really good pass on him, really good at pinging the ball. The one thing that he does struggle with is he has a bit of a mistake in him. But from what I've heard, he'll lose the ball in defense a little bit if he holds on to it too long. Mm. But with the ball at his feet, when he sees a pass, he'll play it. So not a finished product by any means, still a little bit raw. But, man, this guy just as a backup with Kivior, beautiful, amazing. I'm happy.
Solid, dude. Very nice.
Yeah. Are you happy?
I'm happy for you guys.
That's nice.
Seriously, like out of the top 4 teams, like I'm hoping that you guys do it.
Thank you.
I really am.
I'm hoping.
Because the alternative is either our biggest rivals historically winning another title, surpassing us, or it's Man City winning.
Right.
Never want that.
No.
Or Chelsea, I guess. But, you know.
No, they've done. I don't know.
You know, if like Forest win the Premier League, that'd be cool.
Yeah, you know what? Why not? Sure.
Yeah. No, genuinely, like, you guys are moving pretty good. It's a stark difference from what you were on 7 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just me.
No, start difference than where you were on
Thursday.
Saturday. Saturday, we're at the TFC game, and the sporting president said something about wanting to get a good deal.
Yeah,
and you were on the edge.
Yeah, I was crashing.
You were on the edge, and that was 48 hours ago.
Yeah,
40 hours ago, actually.
Look, man, I don't even know what to say. Just get me Rodrigo, and then, dude, it's
10 out of 10 window, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me about Victor Gyökeres, guys. Go on, go. Like,
oh yeah, I can talk again. I'm just happy that a player wants to be here so badly.
Mm.
And that, despite anything, will give him more time with the fans. He doesn't score in his first three games. Ah, you know what?
Yeah.
He wants to be here so bad, let's give him a little bit of time. He doesn't score in like five or six games. All right, well, then we're getting a little bit crazier. But at the end of the day, the fact that he's trying so hard to get here, that his agent's waiving a transaction fee, that he's giving up some of his contract.
They waived over like 8 to 10 million
to facilitate the deal. And the fact that Berta held out and got a better deal for Arsenal. Man, everything about this signing is fantastic. I was wrong about the negotiation tactics. Gyökeres looks like the real deal, man. Like, he looks like that striker that we've needed for so long. He looks the part. I know he hasn't been in the system yet, but he looks the part, man. Like, I'm looking at the strikers around the Premier League, and Isaac is really, honestly, it's just Isaac and it's Haaland. And then there's like a bit of a drop off. Chris Wood has a good season. He can be in that conversation, but he's not in that world class conversation just because of the club he plays at, honestly. And again, it doesn't really completely blow away the eye test.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Besides that, who else really is there? You want João Pedro for a Chelsea fan to be there, but I think he can be better than João Pedro. Ollie Watkins isn't really that anymore. Salah's not a striker, but he's going to be up there in the goal tally.
He will.
Like, I'm fairly confident to put Victor Gyökeres in that conversation of top goal scorers already. And sure, I'll eat my words, but I think he's up there with the Salahs, with the Haalands, with the Isaacs. I think he's up there, and I think he will be up there in the goal tally. And I just want him to show everyone how good he is.
Guess how many goals he'll score this year in the Premier League. How many?
23.
How about you?
I'll go 24. I was going to say, though,
be happy with 15.
If Haaland didn't exist, that is Premier League top scorer worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Blake, Salah's not great.
I was going to say, when was the last time? Because I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't watch enough Barcelona. But to me, I kind of get a bit of like the Lewandowski vibes from him. But also in the sense that this is me being an optimist, that Lewandowski is still doing it at the age he is.
Yeah.
At such a high level. And I think that with getting Gyökeres, like, we're getting him at 27. When was the last time Arsenal bought a player who was in their prime?
Oh, that's a really good question.
No, because we bought Rice when he was, like 2 years ago. He was what, 24, 25?
Yeah, he was still like not super.
Of course, he was like amazing. We paid 100 and something million for him. But,
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, he's 26. Still, like, we bought him at 24.
24 is not.
We bought Declan Rice at 24.
Yeah.
So I feel
that's Rice is now in his
that's
prime.
A really good question. Fair. Like a really good player who's in their prime.
But also another thing to my point is that the thing is with that his profile of being that striker, he's going to be like the older he gets, it's not going to affect his game as much as it would if he was playing center mid or on the wing, you know what
that's
I mean?
That's fair. Yeah, you'd like to think that although he relies on his explosiveness quite a lot, you'd like to think that if he does stay for Arsenal with a long time, and also stay for 4 years, win us a couple trophies, see ya. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to leave and you want to go somewhere else, that's fine. Win us trophies and you can do whatever the hell you want.
Hmm.
But yeah, I know what you're saying. That's a good point. Hopefully he can stay healthy and stay effective throughout the rest of his career.
Okay, let's talk about his fit in the Premier League a little bit, because I think there's two very different conversations going on at the exact same time. Both of them, I think, a little bit drastic. One is the style of play of Sporting is very, very different than the one at Arsenal. Victor Gyökeres has not proven at Sporting, because even against like the smaller teams in Portugal, who were arguably not even championship level, but this even against the smaller teams in Portugal, a lot of Victor Gyökeres' goals would come in transition, would come off of like quick, direct, football. And sometimes you look at the style that Arsenal has, you know, keeping possession, sending crosses in, pressing teams back, going up against low blocks. That's not actually the sense of football that Victor Gyökeres is absolutely used to. So there are some people saying like, oh, we're in for a generational flop. Like if he gets 15 goals, I'll be impressed. Like it's going to be a disaster. On the other hand, this guy just scored 55 goals. are we the Rory Jennings saying that Haaland won't get 15 goals now?
Yeah.
Like, at what point does fit just not get talked about and you just have to call a spade where this guy bags?
Yeah,
this guy bags.
He bags, bro.
But I think, as always, the truth lies a little bit in the middle. And I do see a lot of situations in which he scored his goals last season. And I think to myself, you know what? He's probably not going to be having opportunities like this very often in an Arsenal shirt. Obviously, you guys score goals on the counter, obviously.
Yeah.
But you guys are such a good possession team. And Victor Gyökeres has not proved to the footballing world, because he hasn't been on a side like that, where he's a type of striker to fit that kind of football.
That's a really valid point. And what might actually happen, at least for maybe like the first couple months of the season, is I can see this happening where he scores a lot against the top six teams. He scores a couple goals against City, scores a couple goals against Tottenham, because they're trying to attack us. They're not afraid to let up a couple counter opportunities.
Yep.
But against the bottom six and the bottom half of the table, when we do dominate possession, when there is a low block,
it's arguably that Havertz would be a better option.
Exactly. So again, that's again why it's good to have depth. And you're right, that could be the case. And I guess we'll see. Only time will tell. But I think that discrepancy could definitely show itself, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we'll see how we adapt.
Yeah. I do think he can. I don't think he'll be the same striker that he was at Sporting. Right. I don't think he'll be a generational type of striker that, you know, lights up the and is remembered in the history books and is like some crazy phenom for years and years to come. But the flop narrative is overblown.
Yeah,
at the same time.
Fair.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to go quickly and then we can do whatever.
Okay.
We can go to wherever. Like, I want to look at the – I can even do this on my own. But, like, when was the last time an Arsenal player scored above 30 goals?
25 goals. 30 goals and all comps in a season?
Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to look it up. Aubameyang
scored 22?
I feel like Aubameyang was, like, had a season or two where he was really on fire.
Yeah, Alba definitely did it, but I'm
– Before that, then, it was
before
RVP.
And then before that,
I'm talking about like even recent. So
Alexis Sanchez, perchance. But before RVP, you got to go to like,
dude, like Gary. This season, bro, it's almost crazy to think how good we were. It was Kai Havertz with 9 goals. Mikel Merino with 7. Yeah. This is in the league. But
nope.
Can we do all comps? I don't know.
Anyways.
You can move on while I figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, apparently a fan quizzed Rodrigo in the streets of New York if he's going to Arsenal.
I saw that.
What did he even say?
I don't know. I think he had no idea what he said, though.
Mm.
I don't even know if Rodrigo speaks that much English, if any at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I also see that Liverpool are in for him.
For Rodrigo?
I've seen Chelsea players. I've seen Chelsea fans think that, too, because he commented on João Pedro's post yesterday.
Oh, really? Oh, but I saw actual links that they were looking at him. I don't know.
If they get Rodrigo, I'm crying.
Latest news on Rodrigo.
Nothing from Twitter on my end.
Yeah, Rodrigo is between Arsenal and Liverpool as of right now. But all rumors are very, very, very loose.
Yeah.
Like,
I think with the Rodrigo one, for whoever gets him, and he might even stay. But I think if the links do intensify, it will be an end of the season kind of thing.
Yeah, first couple of Liga games, he's not really playing.
End of the window, sorry, rather.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Other Fabrizio Romano news. You want to hear about United right now? You want to hear how they're doing?
Love to.
Axel Tuanzebe is suing us.
Please enlighten me. Please.
I don't know. I just saw the headline right now. But that's what's going on with United right now. Wolves have agreed a deal to sign John Arias.
No way.
John Arias is coming to the Premier League, lads. Oh, wow. Nice. 20 million fee.
Not bad.
And he's coming to the Prem.
That's crazy.
Something else also I saw that just popped up, well, on my feed 18 hours ago from Fab. Mm-hmm. Saudi Pro League side Neom have sent an official bid for Granit Xhaka.
I saw that.
Now, if you know, if any, if you, either of you guys know the what Neom is, it's isn't basically that? This new thing that the state, the Saudi state, is investing billions.
It's the
billions, it's of the company dollars
that's behind the line, right?
It's behind the line. They're basically like creating a whole new world, like city, a whole new district of the country of Saudi. And until now, they have a soccer team, apparently. I'm going to look them up. And it has a terrible badge, but I'm going
to
see.
Yeah, it seems like a temporary badge, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but it's basically this futuristic club. Oh, they're in the Saudi First Division, which must mean that
it's like an MLS thing where they just.
Well, wait.
They just expanded.
No, but they're no. They were top of their league last year, but I don't recognize any of these teams. Okay. Christopher Galtier is their manager.
Oh,
Christophe Galtier. Wait, is that the guy?
Wasn't he the Saudi manager?
Was he Saudi manager?
I think he might have been Saudi manager. Yeah,
I think you're right.
Career. No.
Shout out. Okay.
No.
Yeah, Neom SC. Neom is like the they're building like a billion, like 100 billion,
so much money,
hundreds of billions, so much on money. Cities. Like they're building the line, like they're basically putting trillions into mega projects. Okay.
Yeah. The last person to score more than 25 goals for Arsenal was Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang in 2019-2020. It's been 6 years.
Lines up.
God.
Lines up. Yeah.
Anyway.
I could see you can have a couple making scoring 20. Him and Sachs together.
And Rodrigo.
I don't know if Rodrigo scores 20 for you guys if he comes. I don't know.
He would, because I'd work my magic on him.
Anyways, lads, in other news, Lamine Yao loves small people, we should say. What else is going on? Alejandro Garnacho is telling other Premier League clubs that he's interested to stay in the Premier League.
The other clubs hung up the phone?
Disgusting. Yeah, like Fab just tweeted last night, Alejandro Garnacho's plan remains clear. He wants to continue in the Premier League this season. His chapter at United is definitely closed. Yeah, so he's basically putting himself to other clubs. Roma is about to sign Richard Rios.
Hmm.
Yeah, I like that for them. Bobby Firmino is going to Al Sadd. Leo Messi scored.
I know he's already gone.
Good one. Yeah, Leo Messi scored his fifth brace in a row in MLS.
Bro, what was that goal? What is that goalkeeper doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
That goalkeeper definitely had money on the line for Messi to score.
Luka Modric is off to AC Milan. And Onana is injured, which I don't know if we've talked about on this pod. Onana is injured.
I'm going to ask you then, who do you want United to sign in the goalkeeper position? If you had anyone that they could sign.
Well, first, it's bold of you to assume we will sign somebody.
Right.
Bold of you to assume we don't sign, you know, freaking Keylor Navas on loan for the season. You know?
Oh my God.
That wouldn't surprise me. United has broken me so much that I am open to an Emi Martinez deal.
Okay.
But like genuinely, like if we want to go long term, obviously Diogo Costa is the dream target.
Mm.
We have a buyback clause for Mateusz Kovar, Bayer Leverkusen.
Okay.
Good little keeper, underrated. Other keepers are being snatched up, like Yohan Garcia. I'm trying to think of other ones that we could go for. There was that there's that Japanese keeper who's really well touted that we were actually in for a couple of years ago.
He's in the Bundesliga, right?
No. Zion Suzuki, I think his name was. Is he in the Bundesliga? He may be in the Bundesliga now, but basically it was between him and Bayinder that we were going to sign a couple of years ago. We went for Bayinder instead. He went to some smaller club and has been tearing it up, and now we're linked to him for like 40 million, which great business.
No, he's at Parma.
What's his name again?
You're right.
Zion Suzuki?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that'd be a decent one. There are also a bunch of other like mid-tier keepers around. Like, I think we were linked to that Milinkovic-Savic at Torino. Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Is he the brother? I think they are related.
I wouldn't surprise. I don't know. I don't want to assume. They're from the same country with the same last name.
Fair.
We've seen that story before.
Alba, sorry.
There's a couple of options. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if United just stick it out with Bayinder for a couple of games and then Onana comes back in like late September. after we've gotten pummeled a couple of games. So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Other news. Freaking Lewis Skelly about to sign his new deal. And Neri's about to sign his new deal.
I'm seeing a report that Arsenal are in contact with Eze's agent.
Of course they are.
Yeah, I haven't even seen reports that you guys are even interested in Rodrigo.
No, I have. I have.
From...
Don't worry about it.
Like, Hand of Arsenal might have said something.
Hand of Arsenal.
No, Hand of Arsenal.
Has been the AFC bell of this transfer.
They're actually quite good. Hand of Arsenal is decent, Tom Ladd. It's decent.
All right.
Let me look up Hand of Arsenal Rodrigo, and I can fact check. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
Okay. July 5th.
Go on.
Intermediaries with direct mandate from Saudi clubs have been told in no certain terms that Rodrigo's preference is moved to the Premier League. Wait.
To the Premier League or to Arsenal?
Uh-oh.
Scary the Premier hours. League. With Arsenal, his... Wait, this doesn't make sense. But with Arsenal, his...
He's reliable, guys.
With
reliable.
Arsenal, his absolute priority in the case that a deal can be made with Real Madrid.
There you go.
So anyway.
There you go.
Yeah.
Have we talked about Crystal Palace being demoted to the Conference League?
Oh, I don't think we have.
You mean demoted? We can demoted. Finish up with
that.
That's a shame.
So they're going to appeal it.
So sad.
So the whole reason is the fact that Textor owns two clubs in the competition.
Yep.
You can't be both in there, which, like, from a fair play perspective, I guess makes sense, but also doesn't, because what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what the hell? Then there should be rules about owning multiple clubs in the first place then.
Yeah.
Because this is such a viable and likely scenario to happen. Why is there stipulations against it? There has to be some sort of rule. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It's a small club being stiffed once again. At first, I was like, well, they have more of a chance to win the Conference League, so maybe this is a blessing in disguise for them. But then I thought about it, like, if United got demoted from the Champions League to the Europa League, would I be happy because we have a better chance of winning the Europa League? No. So I feel terrible for Crystal Palace fans. They are being absolutely stiffed here because of circumstances that they as a club cannot control. And it's super unfair.
Yeah.
Genuinely, it is super unfair.
Yep.
And Lyon's, like, I guess they're still a Ligue 1 club, but it's just,
I mean, you're right. They've had their issues, too.
And he's selling his share, Textor.
Is he?
But it's just not being completed in time.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, anyways, I don't think there's anything else to talk about in the football world.
I'm good.
That'll do it. Once again, congratulations to Chelsea.
Dusan Vlahovic has been offered to Manchester United as a potential option up front. Hmm. United's focus is on Brian and Bermo. But aren't advancing on a...
Is it Brian and Burma?
Yeah.
But, wow, you wouldn't know.
This is per fab, apparently, from...
Just now?
From United Stand, but per fab.
You know what I just saw on your feed?
What?
I realized I have... Go up. Keep going. Stop. I realized I have... I told you, I have Eduardo Hong muted on X. I totally forgot about him.
Eduardo what? Hong? Wong?
Or Hagen?
Hagen.
Journalist?
Because he's a fucking... He's
like a
rat.
He's like a... Yeah.
He's the worst. He's awful.
Anyway, doesn't matter.
Okay. Once again, congratulations to Chelsea. Congratulations to Arsenal finally getting the deal over the line.
Come on.
Hopefully Blake can calm down a little bit now. I love you though, man.
Love you too.
Congratulations to you too.
Thank you.
And again, everybody, if this is your first time listening to the 6 Yard Box podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, do all those YouTube things, and hit that little bell notification so that you never miss an episode of this lovely program. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, give us a little 5-star rating and let us know, is Chelsea going to cook next season? With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Julian, Blake, and Miles, and we will see you all very soon.
We out.
Goodbye.
See ya.